How's it going, guys? My name's Nick. I'm an addict. I want to start by thanking you guys for inviting me to come up across the border and share in this experience with you guys. It's been a good time so far, so thanks for having me out. Yeah. Light clapping from the back. I love Cocaine Anonymous. I was sitting here. It's been a while since I've been in a meeting that read who is a cocaine addict. And, one of the first CA meetings I went to was this giant meeting with like 200 people, and they were shouting all these things, and stuff was happening, and they were reading, and I was like, what? Who the fuck are you people, right? I remember you guys didn't say it here. I was a little disappointed, but they said, like, I only snorted, I didn't base or shoot, and everybody yelled, pussy, and I love it, right? We're hooligans. I love Cocaine Anonymous, though, because Cocaine Anonymous found me. One of the first meetings I attended in the treatment center I went to was a meeting of Cocaine Anonymous that was brought into this treatment center every Wednesday night by members of the fellowship. I didn't have to go looking for you guys. You guys were there, and I'm grateful for that. When you guys found me in this treatment center, I was just so broken. I was just so broken and so alone and so afraid because, I'd been living this nightmare of addiction, and I was in this place of this turning point, right, where I couldn't imagine a life with drugs, and I couldn't imagine a life without drugs. And so, I grew up in a really normal family. My mom and dad are still married. They're not alcoholics. They're not drug addicts. Like, they probably have a six pack of beer that's been in their fridge for like 6 months right now. I have a little sister. Like, we had a dog and a goldfish and a cat. Like, just real, like, really normal shit, right? I just always felt apart from, and I hear this like mimicked over and over again in meetings, right? But I just felt separate from. I just felt like I could not connect. And it wasn't because of lack of love. It wasn't because of trauma. I wasn't beaten. I wasn't molested. Like, we weren't rich. We weren't poor. Like, my parents loved me. They provided for me. Like, they're real rad people, I just felt disconnected. And, I really believe that that what I have, that this disease of addiction is something that's fundamentally different about me and that I've had my whole life. Before I was using drugs and alcohol, I can remember being like 5 years old, being in the store, stealing penny candies, getting caught by my mom, lying to her about stealing the penny candies, manipulating her into feeling bad for accusing me of stealing penny candies. Like, all of the things we do, I was doing before I got here, right? And all of those feelings of like, of brokenness and of shame and of guilt and all of the insanity was in me before I ever took a drink or a drug. And for me, the first time I drank, the promises came true, right? The first time I drank, I had this bottle of Irish whiskey that my grandpa had brought back from Ireland, and it had been in my parents' like liquor cabinet for like, 15 years or something. And me and my cousin decided to drink it, and like, we drank it and we laughed and it was fun. And, as soon as the effects started to take hold, it was like, bam, it was like a light switch went on. And, the big book says that men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol, right? But I think that that's probably true, that most people probably drink because they like the effect produced by alcohol. But the effect that alcohol and drugs produces for us is profound and life-changing. I mean, from the minute I ingested something, it was like, I was okay, right? And so, I was like, I was like 13 years old, and I'd been in school, and like DARE had come in, and they'd said, like, if you drink, you're gonna go to jail or die, or go to jail and then die. And they had all these stories and these videos and all these things, and none of that happened, right? Like, nobody got hurt, nobody got arrested, we didn't get caught, I didn't wake up hungover. Like, all that happened was like something switched in me. And so I tried to drink as often as I could, which wasn't as often as I would have liked to. It consisted of a lot of Mike's Hard Lemonades, fetched from my parents' cooler. you know, I was hanging out with this dude and he was like pretty cool. And he, you know, we were in seventh grade and he dated like the eighth grade girls. And he like pulled this little thing out of his pocket and he was like, hey man, this is some pot. You want to smoke some pot? And I was like, let's smoke some pot, right? Let's do it. And so we smoked some pot and I didn't like, I don't even know if I felt anything, but like what I felt was accepted. And like, we went up to this girl's house and she had like a movie theater in her house. And we drank beers and smoked pot. And I was like, I have arrived, you know? And so I can see, you know, I see a lot of my addiction like retrospectively, right? As I've been here a while and as I've done step work and as I've thought about what it means to be powerless and what it means for my life to be unmanageable, I can look back and see how all of this was unfolding, right? Because in the beginning, it was really cool, right? Like, I would not have done the things that I did and gone to the depths that I went to had it not been good in the beginning. And so here's what it was like for me in the beginning. I started smoking pot. I started hanging out with some people. I started hanging out with some people who were, like, into punk rock music. And I was going to house parties. And all of a sudden, you know, I was kind of a loner kid. Like, I played a lot of computer games. I got picked on. Like, all of a sudden, I had this big group of friends, right? And all of a sudden, I was in this group of people. And for me, that was completely connected to my use of alcohol and drugs, right? All of that happened because I started using alcohol and drugs. And my sponsor told me this line after I'd been sober a couple years. And the line is, if you buy the lie, the truth will beat the shit out of you, right? And so I bought the lie that it was necessary for me to be on some sort of substance to have any sort of meaningful connection with people or meaningful life, right? And so I was smoking pot and, you know, I remember thinking like, all right, I'm going to drink, I'm going to smoke pot, it's all good, it's cool. Like, I hang out in this hot tub with my neighbor across the alley. We drink like tequila out of a plastic jug from Costco because Kirkland brand tequila is high quality stuff. And, you know, it's always good when the guys making your tequila are also like making your socks, right? So we drink tequila and smoke pot and like life was good. And they, you know, they took out my appendix about this time and they gave me this little bottle of pills called Percocets. And one day this guy was like, hey man, you can like take those and get fucked up. And I was like, all right, let's take some Percocets, right? And so I took a Percocet and I drank a margarita because I was classy. And like, I got laid for the first time, right? And I'm like, this gets better and better. And so I... you know, but what I started doing is I said, like, all right, I'm going to drink, I'm going to smoke pot, and I'll take prescription pills. They're FDA regulated, no big deal. And then this guy was like, hey, man, do you want to take some mushrooms? And I was like, yes, I would like to take some mushrooms, right? And so I took some mushrooms. And this other guy was like, hey, man, do you want to, like, drop some acid? And I was like, yes, I would like to drop some acid, right? And, like, every time in my mind, I'd be like, okay, well, mushrooms also come from the earth. They can't be that bad. Nobody gets addicted to acid, like, you know, and so I was drawing these lines in the sand and stepping across. I'm drawing these lines in the sand and stepping across, right? And so this one Halloween, I was out with some buddies, and my friend was dressed in a giant rabbit suit. I had two big blue mohawks. I was dressed as a girl. I was wearing a lace slip. I had been on acid the week before, and these girls convinced me that if I really wanted to be a good girl for Halloween, that they needed to wax my eyebrows. So I had waxed eyebrows, so I was killing it. I mean, I had fishnet stockings, like, you know, big combat boots. I was looking pretty good. And I went to buy some mushrooms from this dude. He, like, robbed me and left me in this trailer park. I grew up in Montana. So I'm in this trailer park, and there's some dudes, and they're, like, they're saying some things. I'm like, we're going to fight, but, like, I'm in a lace slip. I don't know how you fight this, you know. Kudos to you ladies. And one of them, like, ended up being this guy I kind of knew, and he let me use his phone. My friend in the bunny suit came and picked me up, and he was like, hey man, I can get some crank. You want to get some crank? And I was like, let's get some crank. And like, so let's just take a step back, right? Like, I knew some tweakers, and like, they were pretty sketchy. And you know, like, I didn't look at them and think like, those are the dudes I want to be, right? And like, the word crank sounds like a venereal disease, right? I mean, it sounds like something you call the doctor and say, like, I got crank. But, like, literally, like, it's just, like, this inability for me to grasp, like, any sort of consequence or any sort of downstream. Like, I could not tie the fact that smoking crank was going to be like these dudes who were, like, peeking out blinds, right? That there's just this disconnect. literally he said, you want to get some crank? I said, let's get some crank. And we went and like busted out a light bulb and smoked some crank in a basement for, you know, some amount of hours. And I emerged like makeup smeared, wearing a dress, like, you know, 14 hours later, right? And so then I just, you know, I hopped around a lot and I did a lot of different drugs. And I, you know, I started doing a lot of cocaine and I started doing a lot of crank. And, but, you know, I really tried to, I had this idea in my mind that if I wasn't like hooked on something, that I was cool, right? And so I'd like drink for a while with some people and then I'd smoke some speed for a while. And then when they got a little hairy, I'd pop out and pop some pills with some people, you know? And I was like, I'm cool. I don't have any, like, I don't got a problem. Like, I just crack, no big deal. I quit smoking it last week, you know, nothing, right? And so I just convinced myself that it was all good, right? And at this period of time, like, it was still fun. And, like, life was still good. And I was still happy. And I can see now that I was already to a point where I probably had lost the ability to have a choice, right? But none of the consequences and none of the, like, clear unmanageability had popped up yet. And so I was hanging out with this girl and I started popping a lot of OxyContins and, you know, I was like 16 years old and I took a Xanax one day and drank a beer and then puked and I decided I can't go to school if I'm not messed up. And so I called school and said, like, I can't come. They said, you're going to get detention. And I said, well, all right, I'm going to drop out. And I dropped out of high school on that decision. Like, I just decided if you're going to put me in detention, I'm going to drop out of high school. Went there, dropped out. I started living with this girl and her mom was really rich. And I got her hooked on OxyContins because she was really rich. And, you know, me and her daughter were stealing money from her and selling her drugs. And I started to, I started to hang out with some people who were using needles. And then, like, one day, like, I started using needles and, you know, suddenly I was like hanging out with some people who were like, I remember this one day, like hanging out with some dudes who like literally the week before had pulled out an AK-47 on me because they were so spun out that they like thought I was after them. And like, I pulled out a rig to shoot up and they're like, whoa, dude, that's not cool. Like, and I was like, man, this is bad news when the guys who like pull guns on you think that your behavior is not that cool. And so, like, I was hanging out with, you know, and I was shooting dope, and, like, the boomerang started to come back a little bit, right? And this group of people who I'd suddenly become friends with started to shrink little by little because, I don't know, people'd say I'm sketchy because I steal your shit, like, and, you know, I was stealing things from my parents, and, you know, I stole from my family first, right? I started by stealing from my family, and then after I'd stolen all the things that I could steal from them, I started stealing from other people's families, and then I started stealing from friends, and, you know, I was just slowly, like, dwindling this circle of people who wanted to be around me, and I, you know, this woman who we were living with had been pregnant this period of time, and while she wasn't shooting dope this whole period of time, she was, like, smoking a lot of speed, and, like, she was epileptic, and she was having seizures, and, like, it was just crazy, right? And I was, like, 17 years old with this pregnant woman smoking speed and flopping around on the ground like a fish every now and then, and, like, it was just bizarre, right? It was just a bizarre life. And she had this baby. And a week after she had this baby, she called me into her room and said, like, hey, I know you and my daughter have been shooting dope. And, like, if you don't show me how to shoot up, like, I'm going to call the cops on you. And so, like, I went to the store and bought some rigs. And, like, while her one-week-old baby sat on the bed next to us, like, I shot this woman up for the first time, right? And that was one of those moments where I had, like, a moment of clarity. And I was like, this isn't that cool anymore. You know what I mean? However, not enough to stop me, right? And so I'm just like, I'm moving to this basement duplex and I've got blankets stapled over all the windows and, you know, I'm living with this girl and we're like, it's just insanity, right? And like all of the things, you know, alcohol made me feel okay. Alcohol and drugs made me feel okay. They were the solution for me, right? My problem was me. Alcohol and drugs were the solution for me. And about this period of time, the solution was fading away a little bit, and it wasn't giving me the same feeling of peace and ease that it was when I first started using. There's a guy named Planet Jim who says, in the beginning we pay a very low cost for a very high return. And at the end, we're paying a really high cost for a really low return, right? And I started to get to that place where I felt like I was paying a lot, you know, not in terms of money, but in terms of, you know, my moral and you know, I wasn't even aware of some sort of spiritual aspect, but, you know, my inner being was just being corroded to keep going down this path, right? And I was hanging out with, like, people who were doing, like, uncool things, and I was doing uncool things, and, you know, I distanced myself from my family. I've got a little sister who's 6 years younger than me. So during this whole period of time, she's, you know, in elementary school. You know, I can remember coming home one night thinking it was, like, 1 in the morning, and it was actually, like, 6:30 p.m., and they were, like, watching TV, and, you know, I was falling out, and I was, you know, just all, like, junked out and couldn't stand, and you know, she was crying, and my parents knew something was wrong, and you know, it was just insanity, right? And I, you know, it stopped working. It stopped making me feel better, and I, you know, I didn't know what to do, and I was dating this girl, and her grandpa turned out to be sober, and he got word of what was going on with us, and he came with the police to our house, and he took her out of there, and he happened to own the house that we were renting, and he put a padlock on the door and kicked me out, and you know, I decided to get help, and I called my parents. I went over to their house, and I told them that, you know, I'd been shooting heroin for a couple years, and that, you know, I was in trouble, and that I needed some help. And they told me they'd put me in the psych ward because I was in Montana, and that's what you do. There's not a lot of treatment options. And so I was like, cool, we'll do the psych ward first thing tomorrow morning, right? And so I went over to this girl's mom's house. It turned out that that night she had checked her bank statements and figured out that me and her daughter had robbed like $15,000 from her over the course of a couple years. So she was not super stoked. And so my last night partying, right? And so this is the other lie, right? Is that we were partying, right? We always say partying. Like, so this was my last night. I walked into this woman's house. She fucking slapped me because I'd stole $15,000 from her. She told me what a terrible person I was while all of, like, our friends were over there, right? Because we all, like, hung out with this lady. So my group of friends was, like, these six junkies, this one woman, this 80-year-old dude who I bought speed from, this 45-year-old dude who I bought pills from. Like, this is my crew, right? So I spent my last night in the basement of this house, in this back, like, secret room, like, behind the furnace with the door locked, while she just sat outside and, like, screamed at me about what a terrible person I was, and I shot dope by myself in this room. I mean, that's the party, right? That's the party when I ingest drugs and alcohol. Like, there's no party, right? That's a lie. The idea that there's any sort of party out there for me is just not a truth, right? And so I sat there and I spent my last night doing dope in that little tiny room, and my parents came the next morning. I did everything I had left, and I went to the psych ward, right? And so the psych ward's a cool place. I don't know if you guys have spent time there. It's interesting. There was, like, four people who I'd gone to high school with all in the psych ward with me, so I don't know what that says about my high school. That my roommate was, like, a 65-year-old schizophrenic ex-cop who kept trying to arrest me for things and would frequently piss himself. And, you know, so my parents laid out this list of places. You know, I was 18 years old, right? I was 3 months shy of my 19th birthday. I was in the psych ward. I had a just massive heroin habit. And my parents laid out a list of places that their insurance covered and said, you can go to one of these treatment centers. And I eeny, meeny, miny, moed, and I ended up in Phoenix, Arizona. And they said I could bring one duffel bag of clothes and a roll of quarters to use the payphone. And I showed up there. You know, my dad brought me there. He dropped me off at rehab and went back home. And I, the first thing I saw was, it's not in this room, the, like, old English serenity prayer, right? And I was like, shit, I ended up in some sort of, like, Bible situation where they're gonna try and, like, excise my demons, right? Like, Like, I didn't, I was like, damn, I should have read that sheet instead of eeny, meeny, miny, moeing, right? And so, you know, my parents aren't religious. I never went to church as a kid. You know, I've probably, even up to this point in my life, I've probably been to church 10 times. And so I had no concept. I wasn't against, I wasn't for, it just wasn't even something that I thought about. I mean, people talk about foxhole prayers. Like, I did not have foxhole prayers. It was not something that I considered, right? And so suddenly, I'm sitting here looking at this thing saying, God grant me, you know, all I had to see was God. And I was like, oh man, I'm in trouble, right? But I had nowhere to go. Nobody wanted me. My parents didn't want me. You know, I wasn't getting back to Montana from Phoenix on a roll of quarters. And I, you know, so I stayed in this place. And like I said, you guys found me there, right? And Cocaine Anonymous came in and they had a meeting and members of Cocaine Anonymous came in and they spoke every weekend at this treatment center. I started to hear people's stories, right? And I started to hear people like me up there sharing their experience, and they looked happy, right? And they were talking about these horrible things they'd done, and they looked happy. And I remember, like, you know, we're weird. You're new, welcome. I don't know if you've been around before, but we're weird. And, you know, like, I always, like, am really grateful that I wasn't a newcomer at a sobriety countdown, because I think I might have ran. But I... you know, we stand in circles and we like say prayers and everybody knew the words and I didn't know the words and I was like, what's happening? And people kept saying, like, if you want what we have, and I was like, I don't know if I want what you people have, you know what I mean? But I was sitting in this treatment center, and I thought to myself, like, I don't know if I want what you have, but this is the first, like, I knew one, I just didn't know this existed, right? I knew one girl who'd gone to rehab. And this is literally what she said to me. Yeah, rehab was awesome. You know, like, I didn't realize that there was a place that existed where people, like, came and got sober. Like, I just didn't think that was, you know, the people I knew died or went to jail. Like, I just didn't think that this happened, right? And so I sat there thinking, I don't know if I want what you have, but I just really, really don't want what I have. And so I you know, I got through that treatment center, and they had some strange form of the steps that we did there. And I got out, and I asked this guy to sponsor me. You know, I moved into this halfway house, and I asked this guy to sponsor me. And I started working through the steps, right? And I got involved in a home group, and I, you know, was going to meetings and working the steps and living in this halfway house. And you know, it was kind of a bizarre situation. I had, we were in, like, it was like a three-quarter house, I guess, and we were in, like, eight apartments in an apartment complex full of normal people, and, like, eight of them were the halfway house. And in that period of time that I was there, I think I had, like, 15 roommates, many of them who went out in, like, really weird, awful ways. And I was just kind of thinking, like, man, maybe I'm some sort of, like, sobriety vampire that I like suck out all of your good sobriety and then you go back out. But then this other guy moved in and he was pretty cool and we started doing a lot of things, man, and I was fortunate that I got hooked up. You know, it was actually it's kind of interesting because a friend of mine just got 11 years tonight, and I got involved with this home group. And the night that I went there was him picking up his 3-year chip. And so I was just sitting here before the meeting sending him a text message about congrats on his 11 years and thinking about I got connected with this home group that got me connected with a group of guys who were doing this deal, right? And we got involved in service and we got involved in, you know, we started taking a meeting into like a federal halfway house for people like straight out of prison. I was telling Christian before this meeting that the first place I ever spoke was at like 19 years old with like 6 months sober to this group of dudes who were like a week out of prison, and they were like just so uninterested in the knowledge I had to give them. And you know, we were doing a lot of H&I work, and you know, if you guys are new, all I can say is that, like, this is the answer, right? Like, this is the answer. The Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous is the answer. I looked at these steps and I thought, like, I don't know, man. Like, I don't want to find God. Like, I don't want to live a, like, I just want to stop sticking a needle in my arm for a day. Like, and what I found is that, you know, the 12th step says having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, right? Which implies that if I do these steps at some point in there, I will have some sort of spiritual awakening, right? So my experience was, regardless of my intentions, when I went in and I worked the steps to the best of my ability, like, I had a spiritual experience, right? And so I, you know, this is the relief, right? This is the program that's outlined here is what makes me whole again, right? And so what I found is I found some sort of higher power, right? And I don't spend a lot of time like trying to define what that is or what it looks like or what it isn't. It just is, right? And I found through these steps and through some years of practicing different spiritual disciplines a way to like connect with that. And what I found was that like it gives me the same relief that alcohol and drugs gives me, right? The connection I get to a higher power connects me to you guys the same way that alcohol and drugs did in the beginning, right? Except, like, I can sustain this high indefinitely, right? Like, and it doesn't give me, like, the bam, like, it's not, like, an instant gratification like drugs and alcohol are, right? But it fills me, right? Because I'm broken, right? I'm a broken person. There's something fundamentally different about me from, well, not from you guys, but from the other guys, right? And so you know, I need something to fix me. And what I've come to believe is that something is either going to be the 12 steps and some sort of God, or it's going to be a needle. Like, those are my options, right? And, you know, I've been sober for a little over 9 years now. And I started... You know, I got involved with you guys from the beginning, and I, you know, I've always had a sponsor, and I've always had sponsees, and I've always had, you know, service commitments, and I've stayed plugged into you guys because, you know, I've spent a lot of time I got sober in Phoenix, right? So I don't know if they do it out here as much, but in the Alano clubs in Phoenix, they write people's like years on the whiteboards when people have, you know, some years that month, right? And here's what I see is there's like 16,000 people with a year, right? And then there's like half that with 2 years, then maybe another half that with 3 years, then there's like a 5, a 10, 130, right? And so, like, I don't want to be one of those dudes who had a year and then is like out there again, right? Because where do those people go? Like, they're, you know, there's not 30 people with 10 years each month, right? And so, you know, I want to stay connected with you guys. And the only way I can do that is to stay involved in this process, right? And so I was doing a lot of service work and I was doing a lot of things, and but I was like also working as a landscaper, and I don't know, Phoenix is really hot, and I was like digging a ditch one day and like with a pickaxe, like literally digging a ditch, right? And I was like, I'm over this. And I put in my 2 weeks notice, and I started going to like community college, right? And what I learned is that what you guys had taught me in here, I could apply to school, right? Because I'm a high school dropout, you know what I mean? I dropped out of high school at 17 years old. I've got, you know, a GED, right? And so I started going to community college, and you know, the things I showed up for my commitments, like you guys taught me how to do in here. And I tried to be of service to the people around me, and I tried to help people study and help do things. I just applied the principles that I learned here to school, and I did pretty well. And from that community college, I got accepted to Arizona State University. And then I did pretty well there. And I got involved like doing some science stuff. And, you know, I'm now currently in a PhD program studying human genetics in Chicago, right? So, like, I'm literally going to be a doctor with a GED, right? Like, so... And so that's cool, and it's nice, and it's uplifting, and it makes us all feel good, right? But one day, shortly before I left Phoenix, I was taking a meeting into a juvenile detention center, and I was sitting there, and this kid was 17 years old in juvie, and it, you know, most of the people who share in those meetings say some pretty bizarre things, but he was like, you know, at the end of his share, he said, I'm just a 17-year-old dropout junkie with a GED. Like, what can I do with my life, right? And, like, that's why I believe God gave me this opportunity to do what I do, right? Is so that I could share that message with other people and that I could carry a message of hope to this guy, right? That I could tell this guy, like, listen, I'm about to leave to go get, like, a PhD, and I am also a dropout junkie with a GED. So, you know, like, I'm grateful that I get to have that experience, right? And I'm grateful that that I've been formed in a way that I can be of use to you guys, right? During this whole period of time, I also started dating this girl, and she's also sober, and she, you know, she is pretty cool, I think, and she, you know, her dad has MS, right? And so before we moved away from Phoenix, I decided, so this whole, like, eight of our friends got married in a row. It was just, like, friend after friend after friend getting married. And we'd sit at these weddings, and, like, this fucks me up every time I talk about it. Every time, like, the daddy-daughter dance would happen, like, she'd just bawl, right? Because she was, like, so afraid her dad was gonna die, right? I mean, he's got one leg, he's in a wheelchair, he's just, he's messed up, right? And so I decide, like, I want her to have this daddy-daughter dance, and before we, like, leave from Arizona, like, I want to get married to her. And so, you know, we got engaged, and we got married, and, like, her and her dad got to, like, dance at our wedding, right? And, like, I mean, that's why we're here, right? Like, I'm here so that I can live a life that's, like, wonderful, right? And the experiences I get to have with my family and with the people around me, like, just were not possible for somebody like me. When I was getting loaded, my cousin got married, like, 2 hours away from where I live. And I was like, I'll be there, I'll be there, I'll be there. And I could not show up because I couldn't find dope that day, right? But I was able to, like, be a part of this wedding with my wife, right? And be able to be present for her and, you know, watch this amazing moment. And I mean, I don't even know how I can give that back, right? Like, that's just amazing, right? My sponsor told me that if you stick around here, you're gonna experience some shit that's gonna straight fucking blow your mind, right? And, like, and that's been my experience, right? That's been my experience here. And I, you know, I moved out here, like I said, to go to school. And, you know, that's been the hardest thing that I've done in my recovery. You know, I had 5 or 6 years sober when we left Phoenix, and, you know, a huge fellowship and a group of people around me who I loved and cared about and who had been with me since the beginning, right? And it was really hard to intentionally get up and leave that group of people. And, you know, what saved me was Cocaine Anonymous again, right? Because right before we moved, we had the Cocaine Anonymous World Convention in Phoenix. And I was able to meet some people like Kim and Debbie at that convention. And I was able to hook up with them when I got out here and immediately get plugged in with you guys, right? And so you guys have always been there for me. And, you know, it's an amazing program, right? And I get to see a lot of amazing things. And I, you know, I've just got countless, like, anecdotes of the people around me in my life and the experiences that I've had in Cocaine Anonymous that are just, like, it's just amazing, right? It's just amazing that we get to live like we do. And thank you for sharing about being, you know, not glum and having oodles of spaghetti and fun, because, you know, like, that's important, man. I got here 19 years old, right? Somebody told me that, you know, when we're getting people, my, you know, 19, 18, 17, 16, our competition is like the kegger parties, right? Like, I needed to have, like, something that was fun. And, you know, I was able to experience fun with you guys. The first event that I ever did in recovery was a roundup, a CA roundup at a lake. And I went out and I spent a day on the lake and met all you people and had fun and jumped off a cliff and rented a boat. And, like, I just, it was the first time that I really felt like, oh man, we're having fun here, right? And so, you know, I just get to live a wonderful life. And, you know, what's amazing to me is, like, I've just continued to walk through the doors that are open, right? I stay here, and I do the work, and I do the steps, and I stay in the process, and doors open, right? And so before I came here, I was working at a treatment center in Arizona, and through a strange series of events, they fired me for fraud. I didn't commit fraud, but they were not super stoked with some of the things I was trying to tell them they should do, because, you know, I know how things should be run. And I was just like so crushed that I'd gotten fired from this job. And I went and I was volunteering in the science lab at ASU, and I, you know, told this lady, man, I got fired from my job. I'm not really sure what I'm gonna do. And she was like, you know, I just had some funding open up that I can like afford to hire somebody to come work in my lab full time for the next like 9 months, which was coincidentally like the exact amount of time I had left in school. And through that job is what got me connected with the people that now got me into grad school in Chicago, right? And so I find that as long as I stay here and as long as I keep in the work, I have like the right perspective on life, and doors open and I walk through them, right? And even the things that are seemingly bad in my life almost always end up being good. And you know, I just love you guys a lot, man. And the last thing I'll say, I guess, is that I had, like 18 months ago, me and my wife had a baby. I've got an 18-month-old baby. Some of you guys know her or have seen her. She's really super cute, I think. But like, you know, I was talking to my sponsor, you know, maybe 9 months ago about this, about having my baby. And he drew this contrast for me of sitting in this bedroom with this woman before I got sober, shooting her up with this week-old baby on the bed to where I am now, right? And like, I don't know. It's just unbelievable that this program can take us from there to there, right? And so thank you guys for having me up here. Thank you for letting me talk with you, and let's dance, I guess, right? Yeah.